One, two, three, four.
Everybody, let's snap along. Start snapping while you sing. You can't go wrong. It will brighten everything.
You'll find
that singing's contagious. Spread it all around. You'll find that simply outrageous how the world will love the sound. So stop and shout. Oh yeah, with your voices.
Welcome to the Power of Singing podcast. My name is Joyce Wells, and I am so happy to be hosting this third season of our podcast, which is entitled The Power of Children Singing. I wore my best children's earrings today. In the words of the great Ella Fitzgerald, who had no children of her own but spent so much of her energy teaching children and passing music on to children, the only thing better than singing is more singing. And in that spirit, our intention in creating this podcast is to encourage you to sing anytime, anywhere, all the time, everywhere, alone, with other people, with your pets, with your plants. In other words, just sing. Start singing, keep singing, or enjoy listening to singing. Connect to singing in whatever way works best for you. Singing is beneficial for you and the world around you. We're recording this live on Zoom on August 21st, 2023. And we are the five members of the Santosha Voice Group. Santosha means contentment. The Santosha Voice Group provides expert information, inspiration, and opportunities related to singing for all levels of singers. So whether you're a professional, an emerging professional, an amateur, meaning you do it just because you love it, or you literally only sing when no one is around, the Santosha Voice Group offers something doable and accessible for you. We believe that singing is powerful and life-transforming. Check out our website at santoshavoicegroup.com. That's S-A-N-T-O-S-H-A voicegroup.com. And now I will introduce you to who we are individually. Heather Fetro is a professional classical soprano and voice teacher from the Washington, D.C. area. Heather specializes in music by women composers and is an active freelance soprano in the classical world. Hi, Heather.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Joseph Garate is a wonderful tenor and voice teacher based in Southern California, where he sings classical gigs all over the area, is the lead singer and writer for the band Diamonds, and is a DJ. Joseph also writes deeply personal songs and is especially passionate about music for people with special needs. And Joseph has an 8-year-old son.
Thank you so much.
Hi, Joseph.
Hello.
Rich McKinney is a composer, pianist, and choral conductor living in Missouri. Rich teaches composition and composes for local choirs and has a YouTube channel that features his piano interpretations. He was a singer before losing his vocal cords to Agent Orange exposure in Vietnam. Yet his love for music and his commitment to serving it continues to reverberate in the world. Welcome, Rich.
Thank you.
Susan Mohini Kane is the founder of the Santosha Voice Group. After successful careers as an opera singer and a college professor, Susan began channeling her extensive talents and skills into becoming a singer-songwriter and teacher, spreading the joy of singing wherever she goes. Susan has just completed her first album of original songs called Waking Up in Wonderland, which you can find on Spotify or you can find out more about at SusanMoheneyKane.com. The album will be released on November 17th, 2023. Welcome, Susan, and congratulations.
Thank you.
And I'm Joyce Wells, a singer, songwriter, and vocal coach living in upstate New York. After studying, performing, and teaching in many different genres, from classical to folk to Eastern music in the Vedic tradition, my focus now as a vocal coach is on supporting anyone of any age or any walk of life to enjoy your sound, for speaking or for singing. You can find out more at enjoyyoursound.com. And you can learn more about all of us on the santoshavoicegroup.com website. For today's episode, the topic is the journey of a child singing, exploration, and vulnerability. Joseph Gadarte will guide us through this topic. Welcome again, Joseph.
Hello. So, yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit about this and my journey as a singer, I suppose, is a little bit complex and a little bit fraught because that I kind of grew up listening to a lot of people fighting and a lot of, you know, sort of, I didn't always feel good as a child. And I always felt like I had to be kind of vigilant as a child for various reasons. And a lot of the kind of adults that were making me feel that way were also musicians themselves. They were singers, they were musicians themselves. And, you know, I know that a lot of musicians might have kind of negative experiences, you know, as youths, but, you know, if you give a child kind of bad associations with music at some key ages, key developmental ages, and, you know, in their upbringing, it can be kind of destructive, you know, and I think I know that firsthand. So, you know, even though as an adult now looking back, I can see, well, you know, some of these, you know, adults were kind of misrepresenting a culture of music to me. I was conflating, you know, music with, you know, sort of whatever, you know, bad feelings I was having and whatever trauma I was kind of going through. At that time, I was really, you know, like I said, I was really kind of conflating them. And I didn't have that hindsight, really, or I didn't have that perspective, really. And so what I decided as a young child was that I did not want to be a singer. I did not want to sing. I didn't want to be like people. I didn't want to be, you know, I didn't want to go into these places where people sang. I didn't want to have those feelings anymore. I didn't want people talking to me the way they were talking to me. I didn't want to have anything to do with singing. I thought I'd get as far away from it as possible. But what I know now in hindsight is that the kind of desire and the need to perform was irrepressible. So I remember I was in the second grade. I remember this very specifically. And I told a teacher of mine that I was going to be an actor. Very, very, you know, I remember that distinctly. And so it's funny, I was running from singing, but I basically wanted to do something that was kind of adjacent. You know, I wanted to be, you know, in the performing arts still. So I was, you know, right up until college, I was in every play that I would, you know, I could ever be in. And I wanted to be on stage. I wanted to act. I wanted to, you know, I wanted to be, you know, like my favorite comedians. And I wanted to be, you know, do impressions. And I loved getting attention in that way. And while this is all going on, music was kind of in the background. It was kind of lingering in the background. And I found that it was safe and it didn't feel as vulnerable or icky or weird, you know, strange, you know, to it didn't, my identity didn't feel like that first part of what I was talking about. You know, if I kind of obscure music with comedy and do, you know, voices, do parody songs, do jokes, you know, do, you know, impressions with singing in it. And so that for some reason felt okay to me. Like I was okay with that, you know. And but all the while, I was kind of slowly kind of finding my way back. I was kind of getting more and more okay. As I got more comfortable doing these kind of, you know, comedy songs, I remember I would make like comedy albums. Like I would make comedy albums with my cassette recorder and, you know, almost like Spike Jones or like Adam Sandler. I would do all these parody songs and things. And they'd be like these long albums that I'd create with like different storylines and things. I would do that. And then I would find myself just then one afternoon when I'm like by myself, you know, singing like a straight song, just like a vulnerable song that was about my feelings, you know, or, you know, and I was like, oh, where did that come from? You know, well, I'm going to get back to my comedy thing, you know? And so it would kind of slowly pierce its way through, you know, kind of, you know, just very, very slowly because it was just there and I couldn't get away from it. Now, the story has a happy ending. I came back to singing and all of the while, you know, it was great because, you know, my kind of experience on stage as an actor, you know, was very, very useful and very helpful as a singer, as it naturally is, you know, especially in musical theater and in opera and things like that. But you know, it really did take me until really getting into college before I was like, okay, I am a singer. You know, I'm okay with thinking of myself as a singer and a musical performer, you know, and not just an actor, a performer, a comedian, whatever, you know. And so it really was like an 18-year journey before I could, no, a little longer than that, but 19 or 20-year journey before I was able to kind of come back to it. So now out of college, out of grad school, and into being a performer and into being a music teacher, what I have found, what that experience has given me, which I think is really valuable, is that I think I know now, because there was a kind of something missing from my experience, I'm so encouraging to little kids that sing, like you know. So like, I don't want to say, oh, you know, over and overly encouraging, because I don't think you can be, but I answered the question a little while ago that Rich posed. I think it's kind of what I lead with, which is, you know, you're safe. Your voice is natural, is beautiful. Like everything you're doing is great, you know? And we start with that. And then of course we start to work on musicality, technique and stuff like that. But later, but we start with that first, you know, kind of, overarching kind of validation that we give a kiddo, because I think that they really desperately need it. You know, even when a child is being sly or being mischievous or you know, not being the sort of pure little angelic child, even when they're doing that, there's still a kind of a sweetness in the voice, you know. Mm-hmm. even if they're joking, even if they're playing a joke or doing a little impression, or even if they have certain affectations or they're imitating one of their favorite singer, you know, without knowing that they're doing it, you know, there's still a kind of a sweetness in the voice that I think the child loses. You know, I think we all kind of lose it slightly, you know, once you become an adult, once you become a teenager, once you become an adult. And whether it's something to do with youth, something to do with kind of a naivete, something to do with a kind of an innocence, you know, that's a subject for a whole other talk. But there's something that's sweet in the voice, and it's not just physiological. I don't think it's just that, oh, they have small vocal cords, it's pure, it's sweet. It's not just that. There's a certain intangibility, I think, that is there that is, it gets, you know, richer later, and it becomes, as the person becomes wiser, it becomes different, but there's a contrast between that older person and the younger singer, you know? And so I think that it's just like, I forget what phrase you used earlier, Joyce, but it reminded me of what came to me when I was thinking about this. It's like, you know, you're sprinkling the universe with little gifts that a child does when they're not necessarily, when they're just goofing around, You know, just that when we get to hear that sort of pure voice, it's such a little gift that kind of comes through. So I, even though I kind of came to that perspective as an educator, somewhat painfully, I guess, you know, I'm kind of proud that I have it, that sometimes a degree of like personal, I mean, this is, you know, sounds a little bit self-defacing, but sometimes a degree of like personal scarcity in your own upbringing does give you this like fantastic, I think, perspective on what children are capable of, you know, and how important what they do is, you know. So the song that I wanted to share with you all today has basically nothing to do with what I just said, but it does have to do with the fact that, you know, children can be so naturally exploratory and so naturally creative. So I would like to show you a song by one of my students. Her name is Ellie, she's 10, and I'm playing the piano for her. This is actually during one of her lessons. I'm playing the piano for her, and her one instruction to me was that, you know, I asked her, do you want it to be bouncy? Do you want it happy? Do you want it to be sad and dark? She was like, dark. I want it to be dark. I was like, so like sad and dark? She said, no, just dark. And that was all she said. And then she was like, go. And then I just started playing. So this is what you're going to hear.
Awesome.
Wow. What a song. What a singer.
Intense.
Wow. Yes, I know. I know. So yeah, thank you for listening to that. So what I was telling her parents was that I mean, that's just one of whatever 15 songs that we've written in the course of me teaching her. But you know, she's capable of going from you know, that was totally improvised, you know, mm-hmm. and she kind of will just kind of free associate. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we'll laugh at each other, like, well, she'll rhyme ice with mice and nice, like, and we'll just kind of laugh at each other and say, oh, that was funny, you know. But then it's funny because then 30 seconds later, it'll be like she'll come up with some turn of a phrase that is like, oh, I wish I wrote that. Like, where did that come from? It's just so randomly beautiful. I shouldn't say random, but like, so like, cause she comes to it so naturally and organically, so poetically beautiful and so sad, but then she'll say something really funny, you know? And mm-hmm. I guess that this has a little bit to do with what I talked about before, because, you know, she's got these terrific parents and she's growing up in this terrific community where, like, you know, people tell her that she's funny. People tell her that her voice is pretty. She's safe and feels very free to kind of go there with me where, you know, she can, you know, try something and make a fool of herself and not sing perfectly and it's okay, you know, and so she doesn't have that kind of I think self-consciousness that some people have, but she's also just so naturally gifted in that kind of exploratory, you know, way as a storyteller and as a singer. You know, a lot of my students are, and I'm really lucky as an educator, but she's definitely no exception. So thank you all for listening to that. And I was
going to say something about the song.
Please.
We have anything to say? Because I just wanted to say what you were saying. What I was struck by, if there was anything I would say about it, was that I felt like I was listening to someone who was, as you said, yes, feeling safe, but that she, I wasn't sure if she was improvising it or not, but that she was accessing her the true creativity that we hope for all of our students and for ourselves, that there were things coming out of her, whether they were perfect or not perfect or funny or whatever, they were new.
Mm-hmm.
They were mm-hmm. coming out of, I am following, you know, I really right. felt like I was hearing that and mm-hmm. experiencing that in her as a human, you know.
Yeah.
So that's what I applauded, and what I'm really happy for her about.
Yeah. And I was also struck by her, and I wanted to include her today. One of the reasons I wanted to include her today was because it's funny how kids can be so clear.
Yeah.
Like we think we forget about that as creative people too, not even just as educators, but like as this doesn't have to do with education so much, but even just as creative people, as artists. I know I've talked to Susan about this a lot in the past, but like sometimes it's hard for us to find clear ideas when we're being creative, and kids can have that with, like I said, she just said, it's going to be dark. Just make it dark.
It's honest.
You know? And as we get older, we start to kind of like weigh these different things, and we get really, you know, we try to be very, you know, consider all these different options, and we kind of convolute sometimes what we do, and we forget about that kind of clarity, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's another thing that thank you for bringing that up, Joyce, because you're reminding me that that's something else I wanted to talk about. Thank you.
I want to compliment you on finding and asking her where she wanted to go with the song, and finding, I think a lot of people, when they're dark, they would try to steer them away from dark and say, no, let's not go there. But I think you did the right thing, and you allowed her to that expression, and that's what they want. They just want a chance to be heard. That's all they want. And we forget to listen. So this lesson is not necessarily for the singers of the world, but for us who are the listeners. And if we have to start listening to children a little better, I'm not very good at that, but I don't think they like war any more than we do. The end.
Yeah.
It's a good point. But I would say also, Joseph would never steer anybody away from being dark.
Yeah. I know. She found the right teacher. Yeah. Yeah. So kind of keeping in line with this, I was thinking about this, and thinking about my childhood, and I was thinking, you know, I'm fascinated to know what you guys all have to say about this, which is, and you've all touched on it in some ways already with some of the things that you've said, or that you've already said that we've heard. Is there any way that you can kind of track through various stages of your lives, the various stages of your development as a kiddo, as a child, how maybe, you know, how you sang, how the way that you were feeling, how your self-image as a child at different stages growing up, how that kind of came through in your singing voice. If there were things that happened to you or new places that you were or whatever, how did it come across? Did you, you know, sing more confidently at certain times? Did you sing really not confidently at other times? Did it change the things you wanted to sing? How did it kind of change and progress as you got older from being a little child maybe until your adolescence?
I think I can answer that quickly. I was a boy soprano and sang very, very high and very capably, and I could read well and sing also if I needed to. And my seventh grade teacher came to me one day and said, "Richard, wouldn't you like to sing with the other boys down lower?" And I said, "Okay." And we did it. I mean, you know, Jesus knew that I would follow her direction, and I listened and did what I was supposed to do. So I found my voice simply by someone telling me to find it. And I think that's a really good way. We don't know exactly where we're going to them, but we need to give them a lot of, we need them on a leash, but it has to have a long leash.
Yeah.
I thought when I heard your question, I could talk for half an hour on it, which mm-hmm. I won't, but it's like, I mean, that I was so, and in many ways still am, although in a different way now, not just identified with singing, but just, it was just everything, you know? And so it was like, I mean, there were people I wanted to sound like this person mm-hmm. or that person, or, you know, now I was more concerned about whether I was singing right or whether, mm-hmm. you know, going through different phases of, do people like me? Do people not like me? Or going through phases of, you know, when I was in choirs, I'd be put to sing sometimes even tenor or something because I could, you know, just all these different things that had to do with that I was a very capable singer, but not necessarily finding what was actually me that was singing, or what was the true voice, or where I wanted to be, which I think is still an ongoing exploration in my life, honestly, which is, I think is great. It's the gift of music, you know, but that was probably my strongest experience of trying to be something that I thought I should be, you know, mm-hmm. At different points in my life. Mm-hmm.
I have a couple different answers to this too. Cause I always felt the safest, you know, singing, I think at church early on, just because of the community of people that were there for whatever reason. I don't know if it was the faith aspect or how beautiful the building was or something. I was just so brought in by the aesthetics of church and how deeply loving that ideal was, you know, of faith. And it always seems to contrast, you know, to some other competitive parts of school, you know, or something like that. Those first early child experiences, I just dreaded school, like going the first couple of years. And it's not that I couldn't keep up or anything. It was just the endless, you know, I think I mentioned this when we were preparing for the podcast, I tried to hum, you know, sometimes in class and got called out by the teacher, not in a bad way, but do you know your daughter's humming in class, you know, because it was just a lot. It was very stressful every day to be assessed, you know, and feel like you have to live up to different expectations, you know, that people have. And so I'm really aware that kids go through this now as I teach, you know, when they get in classrooms, I think some kids respond, you know, in better ways to that pressure than others. And I think for me, church was a place that, oh, I didn't have that pressure. I could just be with a lot of people, you know, because I had a great family unit, you know, but in terms of being outside of that family unit, for me, church felt like the place, oh, we just sing and, you know, we enjoy each other's company, you know? So that for me always felt like a wonderful place to sing. But I was very lucky. I also was a dancer. And so dance for me was another outlet, you know, that became very expressive. And some cultures, to dance and to sing are the same word, actually, which I always have felt to be true for me too. They both bring out different parts of me that I don't normally express necessarily. Maybe it's the darker side. I don't know. But it reminded me of that when you were talking about too, Joseph. But back to my journey sort of again through church and then dance classes and then later a community choir, which I'll talk about in my episode. I was lucky. I found places that I could be really vulnerable. I'm always so grateful thinking back for those experiences. Because I don't think we can always, you know, assume that a place for a child is going to feel safer or not. Sometimes it's just, this isn't the place, but maybe somewhere else would be, you know. And for me, it was not always the traditional, you know, music classroom. You know, a lot of times it was some of these other mm-hmm. communities. And so I really value that. And the other thing I was thinking about again, related to this is just the idea of when again, you know, you get out into the world as a child for the first time, there's just so much to take in, you know, and there's so much to learn that I think we underestimate sometimes too, how much the singing voice, you know, as you all are talking about, you know, can feel very vulnerable to a child, you know, to put that out there. And so that's something that is important to be aware of, you know, when we put children out there to sing, and that we are responding in ways that are really, really caring about that voice, because it should be protected. And it's, as Rich said earlier, it breaks your heart when you see somebody who, you know, does not feel that their singing voice is valued, because it's an extremely vulnerable thing for kids to put themselves out there in that way.
Right. I know that we have kind of limited time. I could talk forever on this, and maybe this is what my season will be about. But you know, where's the line between how we have to kind of scaffold a child into like becoming a part of society, you know, and how does that, as a part of, where's the line between that process and a child developing who has, as a singer, as a musician? And I'm thinking about, like, you mentioned, you know, that you hummed in school. I drummed, you know, and I thought I was really good. I drum on my desk, and I was always getting in trouble for that. And I was always being told I had to stop because, I mean, it was actually quite loud, probably louder than humming, you know? And it was, I would do it in class. So it's like, sometimes kids do music kind of at the wrong time, at the quote wrong times, you know, kind of despite themselves, you know, and, you know, authority figures have to tell them that this isn't the right time, you know, but I guess, you know, they could have gone farther and said, well, here's another correct time. And when you don't get that second part, right, it can be kind of a little bit destructive, right? And what you were saying too, Joyce, and, you know, is, you know, where does that signal come from that we get as young people, you know, oh, you should maybe be like somebody else. You know, that I try to really get away from that as a teacher, you know, and but I think that it's really hard for all children and even adults to kind of get to remind ourselves that it's, we don't need to do that, you know. So I don't know. It's
a great topic for us.
Yeah. So anyway, that's very, very inspirational. Thank you all.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I just wanted to share my little thing real quick before.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry, Susan.
No worries. It's okay. It's fairly short, but it's along the same vein. Every time I sat down at the piano to play and to sing and to sing loud and joyfully, my mom, if she heard me, would say to just be quiet and to go clean something. Mm-hmm. And so then I knew I was caught, right? So I always learned to be quite stealthy in my music making, real quiet, and or when my parents weren't around and it was all hidden and it was only for me. And still, when I start to sing, I swear to God, I clean up my house.
That's amazing. Yeah.
You know, like to give myself, like, now I'm worthy. I can actually now sing. But like going from that individual, like doing it only for me, to doing it for other people, that was a real journey. And so right. When we get to talking about it in your season, Joseph, well, I'll go into more detail about it, but I'm with you on all those things. So thank you guys.
Thank you.
Beautiful. This was fantastic. Thank you so much, Joseph, for leading us through this topic, which clearly has a lot more to it. And hopefully we will go ahead and do another season on this actual topic. So thank you very, very much. And for now, we will all say thank you to all the listeners. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Power of Singing podcast, season 3, The Power of Children Singing. You can hear all 5 of the episodes wherever you get your podcasts. To learn more about our group members, please visit our podcast page on our website, santoshavoicegroup.com. S-A-N-T-O-S-H-A. May your day be filled with the joy that is so natural to all of us as children. It is still there. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.